Welcome to Zen Mind, a podcast featuring talks from Zenki Dilo Roshi, the guiding teacher at the Boulder Zen Center in Boulder, Colorado. If you are enjoying these talks and you would like to dive deeper into the topics discussed by Zenki Roshi in this podcast, consider becoming a premium subscriber. This will give you access to recorded Q&A sessions related to each talk, as well as previously unreleased talks from our intensives. Becoming a premium subscriber helps to support the continuation of the podcast and Zenki Roshi's teachings. Learn more about it by clicking the link in the show notes. As always, you're welcome to join us live for these Dharma talks. You can join us online via Zoom or in person. You can find a link to our website with the Dharma talk schedule and more information also in the show notes. Now here's Zenki Roshi.
Good morning. There's some new people here. Welcome. Well, maybe my question is appropriate. What is Zen practice? You know, maybe we should really ask, what is spirituality in our time and age? Zen practice is one way we can enter into and explore this spiritual attitude. And when I ask what is Zen practice, you know, I could give you some kind of historical explanation, you know, or something you would learn in a religious studies program, you know, say like it's a form of Buddhism practiced in Japan, came there from China, and so forth. But what I mean is, what is Zen practice for me, and what is it for you? Or what is spiritual practice for you? How does this tradition, or any tradition, you know, if you understand the tradition as a kind of library of methods and mental postures, physical and mental postures, how does it land with you? What do you do with it? You know, when I sit still, still sitting is something like closing off the escape routes, something like that. when I sit still, and I don't allow impulses to move or scratch, or my habitual way of thinking. If I don't allow these kinds of escapes to really take a hold, what happens? You know, what am I dealing with? So I try to give it a name. We don't really need a name. You know what you're dealing with when you sit still. I don't know. I could say something, but you know what it is. So I came up with the word experientiality, you know, and I thought, oh, I just invented that word. And then I looked it up, and it exists. It points to the experience, to the quality of being experiential. So, experientiality, I don't know, I'm not going to insist on this word in any way. But I'm just trying to point to something that is so immediate and yet so strangely alien sometimes. It just means your, you know, what I usually call aliveness, just your, the facticity of being in the world experiencing. Now, we don't really quite know how or why we're in this situation. It's like, it's unclear. It's just Heidegger, a German philosopher, spoke about thrownness. And what he meant is you're thrown into the circumstances of your life without having chosen them. It's true, I think. You're not in charge of the parents you're born to, or the family or not family you're born into, or the culture or historical circumstances. I mean, some people say, you know, you choose your parents, but it's a bit far-fetched, actually. Or it would be a kind of choice that we usually don't call choice. So anyway, it's this kind of thrownness, or what I just, for the time being, have trying to point to as experientiality. It's just something we end up dealing with. It's kind of like, it's the most fundamental situation. I think we have a way of touching it in our zazen, in meditation. Now, if we lived in a sort of entirely deterministic world, you know, there would be nothing for us to do, or, you know, it's like, there'd be no freedom in how to deal with this situation. But I think it's an exaggeration to talk about the world as deterministic. But anyway, I'm not trying to be philosophical here, but I'm just trying to convey that in my experience, there is a very basic kind of freedom. And spiritual practice, Zen practice, is about that freedom. Now, as I already said, I don't think we have a freedom of choice with regard to the contents of our experience. Or, to the degree that we have some choice over the contents of our experience, it's like, it's very limited. You know, you could reasonably say, I have the choice to buy this car or that car because I like this one better. we keep trying to pull, as my observation, you know, in a liberal society, we're trying to pull more and more aspects of our life into the realm of freedom of choice, including, you know, how our body looks, whether we can have children or not, stuff like that, that used to be completely outside of choice because it's so uncomfortable when we have no choice or control over things. So much of, I think, our liberal society's effort is to pull more and more things into the realm of choice. That's not necessarily bad. It's just, I think it comes out of a deep discomfort with, you know, not having a choice over lots of things. Actually, the fundamental things of life that you don't have a choice over. That you're born, that you will die. You know, how your body is functioning. So, I think our freedom with regard to what our experiences is quite limited. It exists to a certain degree, but it's limited. But we have some sort of deep, I just perceive a certain kind of depth in what I'm about to say. We have a freedom in how we relate to the content of our experience. It's like a basic attitude toward life that shows itself in this freedom. Now, it's not easy to talk about this attitude with like one word or, you know, it's still basic. It's sort of withdraws from our attempt to grasp it conceptually. But it's been tried, you know, things have been said. So I recently gave some seminars on Yunmen's phrase, an appropriate response. So I don't know, I have this subterranean interest in Yunmen right now. So here's a phrase that he used, which I've mentioned before. Every day is a good day. That's an attitude. Now, it's obvious that not every day is a good day, because there are changes in how we feel. Sometimes we feel good about things, about the weather, about ourselves, about something that happened, something we do. And sometimes we don't feel good, and there's a whole spectrum of unpleasant feelings. It's like, yeah, you know. And we can find ourselves in an attitude in Zen, in the Zen tradition, this is being talked about as preferences. We can find ourselves in an attitude of trying to selectively approve of certain states of mind and resist and reject others. And this can be the basic attitude of our life. You know that. It's like, I like this, I don't like this. I'm going to strive to improve this kind of thing in my life. I'm trying to get away from this. Life appears as a basic struggle or attempt to say yes to some things and no to others. And this is normal, you know? It's like, yeah, it's just normal. It's like every human being, maybe every sentient being, is engaged in this kind of process. You know, even a plant, be like, this is where the light is, you know? Gonna crawl in this direction. I have this is a kind of side interest of mine that I need to develop more. I mean, I'm really interested in what sense we can think of plants as conscious. You know? There are people who are studying this with, you know, increasing interest and rigor. So I just find that very interesting. You know, like you can speak to plants and lovingly, or can be mean to them and makes a difference. Okay. That's a side note. Okay, and then there could be this attitude that I think Yunmen is pointing to. He's not saying that every day is a good day, you know. He's speaking about the attitude of how to relate to every day, every moment as good. Even when it is not just deeply unpleasant, but seriously harmful. You know, is that possible? I recently asked this question myself, and then I shared it with you, some of you, if you were part of the seminar. You know, is there something in your life of which you feel it shouldn't have happened? It really shouldn't have happened. Like, this could come out as a feeling of deep unfairness, like this is unfair. It's unfair that this is happening, has happened to me, or is happening to me. And, you know, we can all relate to such feelings with compassion, because it's a very understandable reaction to certain events or happenings. What kind of openness is required to say yes to life in its entirety? If you've listened to me before, you know that I make a distinction between life and aliveness. And life is like how your aliveness, which is now, unfolds over time. It's like you have a biography, or you have a narrative, a memory of what happened, an idea or a vision about where you want to go with your aliveness in the future, into the future. But reality, what we call reality, always happens now. And so we are in this now, here now moment, we experience our aliveness. Now, so when I say yes to life, it's like primarily it's yes to alive, to your aliveness, to the aliveness you call yours. Is that possible? And then it includes, because in this moment, what has happened is implied. And what will happen is implied. So then, through this door of saying yes to your aliveness, maybe it's possible to say yes to life, actually, as a lifespan, as a temporal unfolding, where it's possible to accept, deeply accept, that which has happened. Now, it's not something, it's not like I am telling you that that's a good thing. It's more like suffering tells us that something is at stake here. If we try to exclude, resist, reject certain aspects of our aliveness, my observation is we suffer. So Yunmen is putting out this phrase as a kind of challenge. It's a kind of brutal statement, actually. It's like it challenges me to get rid of all the objections I have to life. Is it possible to take on this challenge? I think it's you only want to take on this challenge if you are intimate enough with suffering and how it's linked to resisting and rejecting. So it's not like something we have to do. It's just something that we might realize is an appropriate challenge if we want to really get to terms with our suffering. Okay, here's another thing that I like to quote. Suzuki Roshi says, "I am I am here, and when there's difficulty, I can manage pretty well." That is Buddha. I am here. You know, that's experientiality. That's thrownness. I accept. Is that? I don't even know if it's accepting. It's just, first of all, it's just a statement. I am here. I think when we accept that we're here, then from that you can start to feel into what he means by saying, I am here. And that allows me to take on this sphere of here-ness. You know, it's vast. Here is vast. It's not here as opposed to there. Here is the entire space of experience. If we take on this entire sphere of experience as, yes, that's what it is, that's what I am, then you can say, I am I. And when there's difficulty in this sphere of experience, I face it. That is Buddha. I don't know. Is it Buddha? It's a certain kind of freedom. And courage, but courage only in relationship to this fearful way of shrinking away from here-ness, from this thrownness into our own aliveness. Is it fearfully shrinking away from it, then the reverse attitude would come out as a kind of courage. Does that make sense? I also recently quoted Suzuki Roshi saying, you should be able to appreciate everything as an as an expression of big mind. You should be able to appreciate everything as an expression of big mind. It's kind of the same. There's this experiential sphere that we can call here, not, again, not as opposed to there, but as space. Space of experience. Big mind. He calls it big mind. You should be able to appreciate everything, every appearance, every experiential fact, your thoughts, your sights, sounds, events in the world, you should appreciate all of that as an expression of big mind. You know, we make a small mind, a small self, that is in opposition to things, or that says, this is okay, this is not okay. That would be like the small self. It has ideas about how life should be. what it's like to be this self with a certain kind of identity, you know, let's say call that small mind. This small mind is, if I take Suzuki Roshi's instruction, this should be appreciated as also as an expression of big mind. I appear as this, like, person with certain ideas and preferences, and that's functional to some degree, and it appears as an expression of big mind, and so do all of you appear as an expression of big mind. So, you know, while I tend to care a lot about what's going on here, to appreciate it as an expression of big mind is to appreciate it in its togetherness with everything else. This lessens a certain kind of self-centeredness, but it doesn't mean that you don't take care of yourself. The German poet Rilke, you know, he uses a word that it sounds better in German, but it translates as kind of interior world space. Interior world space, or the world space as an interiority, something like that. For the German-speaking folks, Weltinnenraum. And then there's a poem in which he basically gives an instruction for how to practice that, and he says, cast an interior space onto or around this tree. He just takes the tree as an example of an appearance in the visual space. Cast an interior space around this tree. From within the space that you find exists in you. Do you get that? Cast an interior space around that tree. From within the space that you find exists in you. I try to talk about this all the time. It's a space of resonance, you know, like you recognize that the space in which the tree exists is your own mind. It's like, it's your experience. It's an interior space in that sense, that it's my experience, and the tree appears in it. But to make it an interior world space, it says, like, see the tree as appearing within an interior space. And then the world becomes a world inwardness. Yeah, see, it's hard to talk about. Rilke tried. In this spiritual, Buddhist, psychotherapeutic space, you know, that we live in to some degree, there's this saying, if you can't get out of it, get into it. I think it's brilliant. First of all, it recognizes that we try to get out of all kinds of things. We just constantly try to get out of things. I'm tired. I want to get out of that. I'm depressed. I want to get out of that. I'm in this situation with this person. I want to get out of that. We want to get out of global warming. We want to get out of a war. We want to get out of all kinds of things. Now, some things you can get out of. And then, okay, go ahead, get out of them. But then there are things you can't get out of. And then the instruction here is, get into it. What does that mean? How is that a solution? In this Buddhist spiritual therapeutic coaching space, you know, that some people go into, like us, go get into it means something like, you know, sometimes people like to use the word surrender. I never liked it. I never liked the word surrender because it feels like you are succumbing to a kind of violence, a harm that is inflicted upon you. And the expectation is that you're going to surrender to that. Like, really? But there's something there, right? You can't just dismiss this idea. There's something about you're fighting things. You try to get out of it. You're in a struggle. It's exhausting. It's full of suffering. It takes a lot of energy to do that kind of fighting. And then, what's the alternative? Surrender. Okay? I don't know. I prefer softening. If you can't get out of it, soften with it. You but getting out of it means you're really trying hard to not let it get to you. Now you're turning this around and you're softened so it can really get to you. So, spirituality, you know, the spiritual attitude, it's in our time and age, I think it doesn't work to practice for many people. I mean, I don't know, it's hard to talk about. What we call religion, or what is organized religion in our society, it's so hard to actually practice true spirituality in that space of organized religion. Maybe we're a little too organized. So people have a hard time practicing spirituality in a space that is too much of an organized religion that requires you to take on certain beliefs, believe in narratives that are hard to believe in, do things that are considered right by others, and you are not really asked whether it actually meets your sense of rightness. This gets increasingly difficult for people in our time and age, and I think that's right. That's a correct development. Correct, anyway. Because these spaces have not very much to do with this. These organized spaces don't have much to do with this fundamental attitude of freedom, of finding a way to say, yes to life through saying yes to this, the immediacy of your aliveness right now. Because it's like a code of morality is placed over that, and you're supposed to follow that instead of exploring your existential situation. But at the basis of these religions, there is that kind of intuition of this basic freedom. So maybe that needs to be rediscovered or abandoned for a while or do something different with it, or, you know, some experimentation is necessary. Because in this yes to life, let's call it, in Yunmen's good day, is a possibility of finding something that holds in the midst of change and in the midst of the challenges, and I want to even say impositions, that life throws at us. In spite of all these difficulties and impositions, there is a way, an attitude that we can take that is a fundamental openness. You know, you don't approve of everything that happens. You're just open to it. It's that kind of yes. It's that kind of goodness. It's like out of that kind of yes, out of that kind of goodness, comes the decision, the freedom of decision-making, of going left or right, or, you know, forward or backward, or trying to participate in changing certain aspects of society and life. We can do that with a different kind of power if we're not constantly, and this is mostly non-conscious, in a struggle of like whether we actually are saying yes to this, the fundamental aliveness itself. So by sitting zazen or by meditating, you voluntarily put yourself into this situation where you are cutting off, shutting off the escape routes, where the only way to deal with what comes up as the difficulty of your life is to get into it. To release the resistance, to let aliveness get to you. Thank you very much.